Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
There's a cat over here. There's a cat over there. And the wrong one died. And the wrong one died.
Welcome to The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the catastrophe. I'm your host, Mike Abrams, and today we have another amazing guest. She was Grizabella in the original Broadway production of Cats. So welcome, Heidi Stallings, and thank you for joining me.
Thank you. I'm really excited to be here and talk about everything Cats.
I mean, for everyone who got to see the live show that we did was great, but I don't think we got to really dig into a lot of stuff. So this is what today's about. So let's start with, you have been in, I know, multiple productions of Cats.
Yes.
And so let's start with a little bit of just your Cats history. You started on the Third National Tour before you went on to Broadway. So tell me a little bit about your evolution of being in Cats.
Well, my evolution, I have a really unique relationship with it, because if you go way back, before I even got into the show, a friend of mine was in London in 1981 or 1982, and he lived in Los Angeles, and he sent me a cassette tape of the show. I still have it. I can't play it, but I still have it. And he wrote a note in there and said, "I saw this most fantastic show. I've never seen anything like it. It's Cats, and I think you'd be a great Grizabella." So, of course, I was like, oh, okay, because I love Andrew Lloyd Webber, and Jesus Christ Superstar is, like, my favorite of all of his works. I have a special connection to that because it was the first album I bought with my own money. It was on my radar, and I was curious about it. And so I was lucky enough to have a very good relationship with the casting director, Andy Zerman of Johnson, Lifton, Zerman, who were the casting directors for all the British shows. And I auditioned and auditioned and auditioned, and he called me and he said, "We'd like to put you into the Second National, which is closing in Boston, as the understudy, so you can learn the part so we can cast you," because they really wanted me to do the role, but they had to wait for it to open up. I went, "Yes, I will go to Boston. I will learn this part." And I'd done Evita in Boston, and I'd done Zorba in Boston at the Schubert, so I couldn't wait to go back and see all the people there because I knew them. And it was like, it was this exciting time. And I learned, they taught me the show there. I learned that the Trevor Nunn version, and we talked about that a little bit before, but they're, not that there's different versions, but that the Cats 3, when I went into Cats 3, when they called and I was doing, I think I was doing Jacques Brel's Alive and Well Living in Paris in Virginia. And Andy Zerman called me, said, "What are you doing right now?" And I said, "I'm doing Jacques Brel is Alive and Well Living in Paris in Virginia." And he said, "Oh, well, we want you to go into the Third Company in March. Are you going to be done?" I said, "Yes." So I went into the tour as Grizabella. And that the person who was overseeing that production was David Taylor. So the show, because it wasn't a First National, it was a smaller production. It was the same staging and everything, but it wasn't as gigantic as the First National or the Second National. And so there were some differences, a little bit of differences. And I think that's where a lot of people have different ideas of backstories, and we get into all that fun stuff about who is Grizabella and who is Temple Grandis and who is Victoria and what's really going on. And so then I did that, and then I went into the Broadway company. So, and then I had the opportunity being in the Broadway company to work with Trevor and Jillian and Andrew. So it was really exciting time for me.
I absolutely love that your introduction to the show, because I ask this question a lot, especially with the like 2016 revival or some of the newer tours where they were on, they were introduced to the 1998 movie. And you know, I've asked some of the National Third Tour. There wasn't a 1998 movie because it hadn't, you know, this happened before 1998. And so I love that your first introduction was a cassette tape mailed to you. That is not something I have heard. That is a really fun way to kind of be like brought to the show and knowing that's like, that's something that I could do. And almost you get to experience it in a different way because you get to experience only the music of it first before you actually got to see it and be in it. That's a really kind of unique piece.
Well, that's how I experienced, like, that's how they did, like, but they did Jesus Christ Superstar. It was a concept album before they did it on stage. And Evita, I did Evita, I played Eva Peron in the National of Evita. And the same thing with Evita. It was a concept album before they actually staged it. So I'm kind of used to doing that with Andrew Lloyd Webber stuff. So it was kind of natural to me. But I think it was like so neat to get that cassette tape, and it was like, what is this? And yeah, so it's unique. And then I got to hear it, and then I thought, oh yeah, I have to sing that song. I have to. So
that's incredible. I just love that. I'm sure there's people listening to this who can't fathom, you know, a non-social media world or a world where there's not some version of the video and audio together to watch. So let's go though to your Broadway. You now get and you're on Broadway and you're performing as Grisabella. I would love to hear a little bit about what it was like learning from, you know, from Trevor and Julian and Andrew Lloyd Webber about this production and particularly about Grisabella.
Well, I have to say to give, you know, kudos to the people that I worked on the tour with. A lot of it was coming from Trevor and Julian and Andrew Lloyd Webber. So a lot of the initial introduction to the show and to the role was similar or exactly what the original creators wanted. I think for me, which was fun, was when the original, they would come back and they'd work with us. And what I loved about Gillian Lynn is that she understood, because it was such a physical show, that you think that you're doing it, you think you're kicking your leg up at your ear, and you're not, because you've been doing it over and over and over and over again. So she would come in and kind of change things up a little bit, like because it was her choreography. And she would change it up, and instead of reaching on five, I would reach on like three to make it fresh and new. But that was really a gift. And she also would just kind of change some things. And I remember at one point, it was a year because we just had the Olympics, right? And it was an Olympic year, and she decided to add some more tumbling in it because she said, darlings, that's what the audience wants to see, don't you think? It's Olympic year. Let's do that, shall we? You know, so it was just wonderful to watch, for me, to watch her create. And the same with Trevor Nunn does not speak loudly. He's very quiet and he's very conversational, and he'll say, let's have a go at it, shall we? And it's very easy and just simple. So some of the things that he had taught me were things like when Grisabella walks in, the initial walking into her remark, it's as if, he said, she wants just to come in and just kind of be there and not necessarily draw any attention to herself. But what does happen is that she walks in and they sense her. And so it's as if everybody's at a party and they're having a really, really good time. And the phonograph is on, and there's and somebody lifts up the needle from the phonograph, and the music stops, and everybody looks, and there she is. And it's this moment of, oh my gosh, right? And the moment for me that's key, because it's the first introduction that the audience has to the character. Everything's fun, 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 and, you know, we're going to do this and do that, and people are jumping around, and all of a sudden the music gets very serious, and all of a sudden this being comes in. And audience doesn't really know that she is Grisabella until they sing about that it that is Grisabella, but I think the audience knows that, uh-oh, here comes trouble, right? And so I think trying to distill that character into 15 minutes, because she's on stage for 15 minutes total, and to be able to tell the story is really, really fun. And it would change nightly, but I always knew, because other certain cats would look a certain way at me, or a cat wouldn't one night. But I do think that Grisabella's focus in that is Munkustrap, and I believe that she had a relationship with Munkustrap, and she's the one that sings Remark the Cat right at him and walks right towards him. Mm-hmm. And the way it's staged is that she reveals her, she opens her coat, and it's a sexual overture is what it is. And she opens her coat and reveals her body to him. And so Gillian really directed the show and choreographed the show in a very sexual way with all the cats, because cats are very sexual and they're very sensuous and they're not self-conscious. And so that was really the takeaway that Gillian gave me, but also that's her background in, she was a prima ballerina and a great ballerina. She had roles created for her by Frederick Ashton, who was a great choreographer. So she was famous for her dramatic role she did in the ballet. So she really knew what she was doing. And that small little dance at the end of the first act is her favorite part of the show, because it's the part of the show where it really talks about or lets the audience know that she really, Grisabella's trying to remember the dance, and she's trying to compete, and she knows that she has to go in front of Deuteronomy and try and tell her case of why I should be reborn. And I think when you do that dance, she's trying really, really hard to do it, but it just doesn't feel right. She can't do it anymore. And there's no one there she's so alone in that moment. But that dance is what brings her to that moment when she sings the little memory, the first time she sings it, and her feeling of complete aloneness and not knowing what to do or where to go. So she escapes into her memory. And then Trevor was just inspiring on every level, on every level. He would bring Shakespeare in. He would bring, Greek theater in. But you have to realize, and I think it was in the late 60s, he took over as artistic director for the Royal Shakespeare Company from Peter Hall, Sir Peter Hall. So I think Trevor was maybe not even 30 years old. So he is, Trevor Nunn knows more about theater than anybody I've ever worked with, maybe except for Harold Prince. But just working with him was thrilling. And he always wanted you to find your way into the character, even though it's choreographed and I was a replacement. And I worked with many people. Of course, we didn't work with Trevor very often because they didn't come in very often. It was the production stage managers that helped us. So Dan Hild was one of the first people I worked with that was really, really extraordinary and really helped me with the role. I think the challenge with Grisabella is that, and I think this was interesting because they never tell you what she is. They always tell you what she isn't, which is smart. So they say she isn't a bad lady. She isn't dead. She isn't dying, and she isn't old. And that might be the first thing you'll think. Well, she's an old bag lady, which is not so interesting. And so that makes you, as an actor, think about, well, who is she and what is she? And what do other people say about me? Because Baum and Demeter sing Grisabella the Grammar Cat, to me. But I sing Remark before anybody, I say it before anybody else can say it. I say it first before they can make fun of me. It's very interesting. And so just, you know, just working moment to moment and understanding the character, but also these three people are so, and also all the production stage managers I worked with and all the dance captains I worked with, extraordinarily talented people that kept it alive and reminded me, you know, Heidi, you're rushing this, or take your time looking at Monka's Trap, because you do it so much, you think that you're doing it and you're not. That was a lot. That was pretty long-winded, but it was a great question. So,
No. I mean, it's great. I wanted to hear from a little bit more about. I love that hearing that you're told what she's not, but not who she is. And I think that that's a really interesting piece. And then another part of that is that you said that you really only get 15 minutes on stage, which I think you said that in the live mm-hmm. show. I don't think I put that together of how, I mean, it makes sense, but I don't think I really realized how little time on stage Grizabella has to make an impact. So my question for you would be, who in your eyes is she? How did you as a, you know, an actress fill in the blanks? And then how did you try to convey that message in 15 minutes?
Well, that's what the actors do a lot of times, because you have to look, the first thing you do is look at the text. What does the text tell me? And then what does she say? What do I say? Why do I say it? And there's not a lot of text, right? There just isn't. So I always go to plays. I always will do that because I'm an actor as well as a singer. And I was trying to think of what plays remind me of Grizabella, and how can I kind of maybe find an entryway into that character? Because symbolically, she's, you know, the fallen woman, or she's the prostitute, perhaps. Or, you know, she's also the prodigal daughter, the prodigal person, I guess, coming back. There's an element of that, too. She's an archetype. And it's very hard to play an archetype. You have to find that reality. So I went to Tennessee Williams first because of his poetry and his poetry as a playwright. And then I went to Blanche DuBois, who, because of her experience, and she's haughty and she's proud, and there's a lot of similarities between Grizabella and Blanche DuBois, and that she will escape into her memory to survive. And the other really big iconic character was Norma Desmond. Again, another woman who time has passed by, living in the past, living in her memory and her dreams, but she's very strong. She's nobody's fool. And that's the thing with Grizabella. Grizabella at times has contempt for the fellow cats, I think, because they don't get it. And so I went there first. That's where I went. And then I thought about T.S. Eliot, who is one of my favorite poets. And I love the love song of J. Alfred Prufrock. And I thought about, indeed, he wrote this piece, or the Opossum's Book of Practical Cats. It's just his poems. And it was created for children. So there's no stage directions telling you this. There's no character description. There's nothing, right? So that's how I started to create her. And the other thing I always do is I look at the designers. The designers are geniuses. This is John Napier is a genius. And he designed the costume, and he designed the makeup. And I just looked at what he created. And Grizabella is the most human of the cats. She wears heels. Everybody else is in flats. She has human hair. Her wig is human, with the little bows in it, like the Baby Jane thing.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. Suf's The Original New Musical from Shana Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
She has a dress on. She literally has a dress. It's a beaded dress, hand-beaded dress. That's what she has on. She has a boa around her neck, and she has stockings, and one they're falling down. So what is John Napier telling me? What is the designer telling me visually? Brilliant. It's just, don't you think, Mike? Isn't that brilliant? It's just like, it tells me everything. And her coat.
It is.
Her coat is like the Elizabethan, you know, collar. That she is a queen. She is the queen bee. And the minute you look at that, you can't like, oh, okay. And then, so I looked, and then makeup. And her makeup is, she had like these, makeup is that it's running from her crying. That's why she has those little things there, is the idea that she's crying. And then a lot of Isabella's think she's bleeding in her mouth, but I don't think she's bleeding. I think that she's just kind of like, you know, like in her life and just kind of, she's just kind of distracted, and she just rubs it. She just, it's smeared. I think it's just, she just smeared it. I don't think that it's blood. I think it's just her not being totally together. That's what I think it is.
What is so fascinating about that, and getting to hear you kind of go through that, your thought process behind it. I think a lot of people are going to find this really interesting to hear, because as not an actor or an actress, it's what you have to go through in a role that's still relatively fresh. And, you know, it's as even though there were a couple of tours before and there were some productions before, there's still a lot of, you know, you're not told a lot what you've said. Whereas the way I got to look at it is I get to look at 40 years worth of it. And so I'm watching 40 years worth of different productions and different things and interviews and all the rumor mills and thousands of fan fiction stories and everything in between. So when I kind of take the breakdown, it's a different interaction. So it's really interesting to hear your version because of what you had to do to succeed in the role versus what me as just a fan who can watch can do to try to analyze this. And so I want to now switch gears with you on the part that I've analyzed probably the most. And I think we talked a little bit about how we have a little different opinions on this, or these are things that you hadn't played necessarily. But I want to talk about the relationships with other cats, because I think I mentioned in the live show a couple potential children, which you didn't think were the case. Mm-hmm. So I think you just said that Monk is kind of the biggest relationship. But what other relationships did you play, whether it was sexual relationships or family relationships, for Grisabella when you performed as her?
That's a great question. Jelly Lorum was a big one. Jelly Lorum was a dear friend of mine, I think. Jelly Lorum, actually, when I come in, the kittens are curious about me, and she shoos them away. She protects them. And then she shoots me a look like, I can't believe you're back here. You know, you left us. And I think that because I left, that leaves a lot of, you know, they don't know why I left, or maybe some people do know why I left, but when you leave a tribe or a family, there's a lot of unresolved business. And you come back and it's hurt, you know, that's hurtful. They're angry, they're jealous, I don't know, but there is a lot of that. I know Bob Ballerina, the relationship I had with Marlena Danielle, and she was the original, right? She, phenomenal, phenomenal actress, phenomenal singer, phenomenal human being. She was like, do whatever you need to do, girl. That was kind of who she was. She's like, okay, you're here. It's fine. I'm glad you're not dead. It was sort of like that. I mean, she didn't really get in my way. Cassandra, oh, forget about it. I mean, she would, like her eyes, if she could have killed me, it would be like, I remember she turned around and just, and of course, Monka's Trap is really the thing. Syllabub, because Syllabub is like I think she's a grizz in training a little bit. I think Grizz sees herself in Syllabub, and I think Syllabub kind of could go either way, as opposed to, you know, Victoria, who is symbolic of purity because she's the white cat. But Syllabub she's a little
Bob-bellied.
Huh? McCavity? I don't worry about McCavity. It's sort of like, I don't know, it's kind of like, I feel like Glinda the Good Witch, be gone, you have no power here with McCavity. I mean, he's the Lord of the Underworld.
Rumor with McCavity that I think is interesting for your characters is that McCavity is the reason Grizabella leaves and goes on this dark path. And I think, that was one thing I had definitely potentially interpreted versus, I think, you know, when we did the live show, it was more about how Grizabella went to went to LA instead of London or whatever, went somewhere else to try to make it and didn't make it versus being almost brought into this negative world by McCavity.
Well, I don't think Grizabella left to be on Broadway. I think Grizabella left because she was talented. She wanted to be her own woman. And she didn't think that she had any potential to live to her potential within the structure, the patriarchal structure of the junkyard. That's what I think. So she left to find a better way. She wants a better life. She wants to live to her potential. And I think that it was much rougher out there than she realized it was going to be, which I think because I see her as, a very beautiful woman, she's Grizabella the Glamour Cat. That's how they describe her. But along with that glamour comes probably some haughtiness, I'm better than you. But I think underneath there, she might hide her natural warmth. But I think she's one of those women that has, a natural warmth that she gets taken advantage of a lot, maybe, and made some really bad choices. And things just didn't work out the way she wanted them to work out. And if I were going to go to a play, I would go to Nora in Doll's House. We don't know what happens to Nora when she slams that door and leaves everything, which is pretty scary, but she did, and very brave. And it caused a riot in the theater when she did that, because people don't do such things. You don't leave your husband in 1899. And she comes back that day, like, why today? And as an actress, I have to ask myself that. Why today? Why is she coming back today? Because today, she knows, is the Jellicle Ball. And today is the day that she might have another chance to be reborn and come back and have a better life. And that's what fuels her coming back.
Wow. That is super, again, it's so thoughtful. And especially as the person who has very different ways of having, maybe my mind is, I guess, thoughtful, but in a very different way of thinking about the show. It's so unique to hear. And I think that's the beauty of the show, is that there's so many different perspectives.
Exactly.
Of this, that there's just millions of ways to interpret it.
Because that's what they don't tell you, right? They want you to find your truth. The creators were so brilliant in that, because yes, if that's what resonated for me, and they gave me the freedom to do that, which is a gift. So each Grizabella is different, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's really thrilling. I think instead of trying to fit into like a cookie cutter, we have to do this and this is what she did or whatever. It was really an interesting process. And also doing it for, you know, in many different ways for different audiences and stuff, I would try to find other inspiration. And there was a, I don't know if you've seen this movie, it's Naked by Mike Lee. It's a really, really great movie. And there's a very short scene in that movie, is in the woman is called Woman in the Window. And it's a woman, an older woman, and she just is trying to look pretty and trying to get ready. And it is maybe 45 seconds. And I saw it with then my husband, and I went, oh my gosh, that's Grisabella. And inspired me. So I found inspiration, you know, daily. Or I would find it in other people's performances and think, oh my gosh, I didn't even think of that. So that's what's fun about it, because it's not like painting by numbers. You know, it was always alive. It was always happening in the moment. And that was a real gift. And I credit the original creators of it for that.
So let's do a little bit of rapid fire. Let's do a couple questions I like to ask everyone. So if you were not going to play Grisabella, if you could play any other character, which character would you want to play?
Me, just Heidi? Just personally?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
I think I play Jelly Lorum, because she gets to do Griddlebone, because she gets to be the opera cat. I would do that.
Love it. So you play your best friend. Come in and play your best friend.
I would come in and play my best friend, yes.
Who are your favorite and least favorite cats?
I don't have any least favorite cats. But my favorite cats are the white cat, Gus, Syllabub, as I mentioned before, Bomb, Ballerina. I like Tantomile a lot, because she's such an incredible dancer, and she doesn't have a lot to, you know, vocal line. She sings a couple of vocal lines in the opening, but she doesn't have a real strong written presence. But her presence is there very much. She's part of the twins, and I always loved watching that. And of course, I want to be Tugger. Who doesn't want to be Tugger? You get to be like, you know, Tim Curry, you know, or Mick Jagger. I mean, that would be so much fun to do that. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Those are the ones that pop for me right away.
I love it. What about your favorite song from the show?
Memory.
Of course.
No, and my favorite song, actually, I really like Remark. I just like singing it. I think it's really fun to sing it, and it's really intense, and it's really fantastic. But if I were going to choose another song, it would probably be The Moments of Happiness, because it's so, like, it goes around and around, and it's ineffable. You know, as they say, effable. You can't wrap your brain around it. It's a beautiful, beautiful song. So I think that one, yeah. Moments of happiness.
Okay, so this is a question that is a little different. So if you take the characters, I want you to think about and tell me, which character do you think would be thriving in the 80s when you kind of first started with Cats, and which character do you think would be thriving now? Meaning, if you stuck the Cats personality in those eras, who would be winning life?
Oh, who'd be winning life? Well, you know, I think of the 80s or the 90s, I mean, because Muckstrap is so, like, you know, he's a leader, and he's really by the book. But he's not, you know, and like the Wall Street, that whole Wall Street thing. I don't know. I think Muckstrap would do good in the 80s and 90s.
I love that you went to Wall Street for the 80s and 90s as a good way to do it. Because everyone, what you just said is, a lot of people go to Tugger for the rock, you know, the rock ages. But going to Wall Street, and I could just see Monk, you know, suit and tie up, getting ready to go
to
do a day trade.
That's what I mean. I mean, if rock and roller is always, he's always relevant, right? I'm thinking, but he would, but if it was Tugger in the 80s or 90s, he'd be Simply Irresistible. Who's that guy who did that? I can't think of his name right now. It'll come to me. He would be cool. You know, he'd be very cool and laid back. It's different.
Robert Palmer.
That would be fun. But he'd have to morph into a Robert Palmer.
Said Mick Jagger, which is kind of the way I thought about him. Mick Jagger or Bowie or somebody like in that frame. So I do think he does fit in that era. What about today?
Mick Jagger is still alive today. Who would survive today from Cats of those icons?
I guess the question is more of if you stuck the cat in today in 2021, which cats like personality wise is probably enjoying themselves. I've heard a few different fun answers to this. And so there's always a bunch of ways to take it, but I always love hearing because I had not heard
themselves.
Monk Wall Street.
Well, I go to Wall Street in the 90s because, yeah, that's what was going on here in New York. 2021, it's all about right now, it's all about influencers and, you know, how many followers I have and it's all about TikTok and making films, right? I don't know. You flummoxed me. I don't know. I have to think about that.
Well, where you're going is the most common actually answer I've heard, which is either Bomb or Victoria or somebody doing that, being an influencer and building a following for TikTok and YouTube and everything else.
Well, Bomb would do that. I think Bomb probably would do that. I go to the other side of that more for like the whole gender idea that's happening now, which is exciting, and Black Lives Matter and all of this really exciting work of EDI, equity, diversity, and inclusion. To me, that's really exciting right now. And I'm trying to think of which cat would be the person that would really lead the way for that. I'd have to think about it. But I think that's, for me, that's what's happening right now. That's where we're going to.
Definitely.
So the influencers and all of that, that's fine. But I mean, if you can't tell, I always go to like the very serious deep end of something. I'll find that in like a tuna fish sandwich, you know. But it's like, I think that would be, who, like, be a, you know, it might be, it'd be Deuteronomy, but Deuteronomy, because he's kind of all-knowing, and he would have a lot of followers, and a lot of people would follow him. A lot of people would, he's such a leader, because he's not just a leader, he's like a Gandhi, you know, or a Nelson Mandela, or a John Lewis, you know, people would follow him. So,
completely. He's almost he's the cult leader, but not, you know, in more positive light in this way. So, okay, I've got to ask you my last question.
Okay.
The million-dollar question. And I know you've given your defense for Grizabella, so I'm going to ask the question a different way, because I've argued that I don't think Grizabella should be the Jelko choice, and I know that you do think she should be. So my question to you instead is, why not Gus?
Because Gus hasn't given up his ego yet. He's still stuck in being an actor. The reason Grizabella is chosen is because she gives up her ego. She says, I need you. Help me, touch me. You know, she can't say it. Something that's what she couldn't say until then. She could never admit that she was vulnerable, that she needed, right? So she's given up her ego. She's let it go. Gus is still holding on to that. You know, that if she didn't show up, he would go, I think, because he's old, and the other cats too, they're young, so they have other opportunities to go. If I was playing Deuteronomy, right? It's like, well, Victoria's pretty young. You know, she could go, but who really needs to go and try again? Who's made the most mistakes? Who's lived through something that they know there's a better way? That's taken some risks. That's Grizabella. She left. Mm-hmm. So she gives up her ego, and then they go, okay, you can go try again.
So I kind of do, and I do appreciate that, which is by your criteria for Deuteronomy is that it's someone who has to be like, you know, on the older side, have lived life and need that next experience. So that pretty much only leaves you and Gus, Grisabelle and Gus. And in that scenario, it's Gus hasn't given up himself yet and is too selfish. So between the two, I'm only choosing between the two. That's why Grisabelle choice.
But I also think because it's her story. That's also just, you know, I can't imagine anybody. I don't see why I can't justify, you know, if you're thinking about why you would choose, why someone would be able to be reborn or resurrected or whatever you would want to call it, to have another chance to get it right. I don't think anybody in the show or any cat in the show shows any. Demeter's just terrified. She's just terrified of McCavity because he raped her. That's what I was told. So she's just terrified he's going to come, but that's, you know, and take her to the underworld. But that's interesting. That's my belief, that she suffered the most and she's learned the most. That's why she's the most human. That's why her costume is the way it is. So for that production, but I think that you could direct it definitely if you wanted to do your own production of it and have your own thesis. You certainly could have a really good reason for other people to go. That might be very interesting, actually. You know,
well, that is the root of this podcast, is my thesis, to try to change everyone else's mind and whenever, maybe one day, rewrite the ending or completely have a Cats 2. But I wanted to thank you so much for coming on. This has been so fun to hear your takes, hear about, you know, how you thought through the, you know, the production and through the character development, what, you know, you inspired you to do it. That's such a unique piece to get to hear. So thank you so much for taking the time today.
You bet. I loved it. And I loved sharing that with whoever is going to be directing it or performing in it. It's fun to pay it forward, so to speak. So, yeah, thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for listening to this episode of The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the catastrophe. To follow along, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or anywhere else you listen to podcasts. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at The Wrong Cat Died, or check out our website, thewrongcatdied.com.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.